Little Thoughts is just getting down the trail and stopping in about 50 miles and leaving it at that, and not thinking about 1,000, because that would crush my soul if I thought about that too long.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and pacing, not racing so much at this point, although some fast teams have already jumped out front since the official start Sunday in Willow. I'm your host, Casey Grove. The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM. Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, though, here's how you can help support this podcast.
Hey there, I'm Holly from Alaska Public Media's marketing team. Help fuel our Iditarod coverage. Your support funds journalism at Alaska Public Media, including our reporters on the trail. Give today at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod, and for a limited time only, you can receive an Iditapod sticker as a thank you gift when you support Alaska Public Media with an annual gift of $60 or more, or $5 a month. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Holly, and thank you all for listening. Happy Monday, y'all. When we left off, the Iditarod had kicked off with a jubilant ceremonial start in Anchorage on Saturday. Then we had the official start Sunday out of Willow. That's about an hour's drive north of Anchorage. And it sounds like all the sled dog teams and mushers and their trucks and those big dog boxes on the back made that drive to the starting line safely. I'm sure that the mushers and dogs are all much happier out there right now on the trail rather than trucking down a highway, especially after all the preparations and worrying that come along with years sometimes of preparation heading into the race. That was rookie Idaho musher Jed Stevenson starting off the show, talking about not letting his mind wander too far down the trail. It's a long one, you know, 1,000 miles over a mountain range, along the Yukon River, out to the coast, along the sea ice, and yeah, it's a lot. So we've heard mushers in the past and present, like Jed, talk about trying to keep their focus on smaller bite-sized pieces of it all so as to not get too overwhelmed. Still, though, here's what reigning champ Brent Sass had to say about starting his 8th Iditarod.
I feel like I'm the calmest I've ever been for any Iditarod start.
He sounds pretty chill to me. That guy has been through a lot, always rolling with the punches. Speaking of, we have a bonus episode, one of those extended interviews with Brent from right after he had won the Yukon Quest 550 in February. He had just returned to his own trail, to his homestead north of Fairbanks, to find a frozen snow machine. Then he had to sleep in his dog truck, and like a lot of obstacles, Brent was laughing about it afterward, so check that out in your Iditapod feeds. Sass's team is, of course, expected to do well in this year's race. We have a longer story today about the competitiveness of teams in the 2023 Iditarod. Again, only 33 of them and the smallest field in race history. We also have a dog of the day, the DOD, a big boy named Boomer from the aforementioned Jed Stevenson's team, as well as a listener question about what dog mushers do when they're not dog mushing, like what is their day job if they haven't been able to quit their day jobs to be full-time dog drivers. First, let's take a look at how the race is shaping up, as much as that means anything right now. About 120 miles into the race at the Finger Lake checkpoint, Brent Sass was the first to arrive this morning, but he went through the checkpoint itself and camped not far beyond it. That's where Sass was passed by Nick Petit, the Frenchman turned Girdwood resident turned now Big Lake musher, and Ryan Reddington of Knick, among others. Petit had jumped out to something like 10 miles ahead of the others, but as veteran Iditarod watchers know, this part of the race features a lot of leapfrogging as teams follow their run-rest schedules and try to set themselves up for runs further along. For Aniak musher Richie Deal, that meant running his dogs through the night and early morning, planning to go from Finger Lake to Rainy Pass, where the trail trends uphill, and with that gain in elevation, the trees disappear, there's no shade, and, well, here's Richie in Finger Lake.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, you know, to get somewhere around Rainy Pass, whether it's in Rainy Pass or a little further right before the sun starts baking us, you know, is that's the goal here. And then when that, because a lot of times, you know, when you're in the pass there, the sun just beats down on them, so it's like perfect time of the day to just let them rest, soak in the sun, and recoup with it, you know. So that's the big part.
So Richie Deal in that clip, courtesy of Iditarod Insider, talking about his plan to let his dogs rest up in Rainy Pass in the relative heat of the day, and then running at night when it's cooler. I'll update the standings a bit toward the end of today's episode, but yeah, the lead, as it were, is changing constantly. The best free way to check the current standings is at Iditarod.com by clicking on the Race Center tab and then Standings. Those are the official standings that show when mushers arrive and leave checkpoints, how many dogs they've got with them, if they've dropped dogs. If a musher has to drop out, you'll see that they've scratched there. But if you want to shell out some cash for an Iditarod Insider account, you can also track the mushers in pretty much real time on the race's GPS tracker. We've been tracking these folks from before the race, actually, and now it's time for that story from Lex Trinan about the competitiveness of this year's small Iditarod field.
On a foggy day in Big Lake, just a week before the start of the Iditarod, musher Kelly Maxner is pulling dogs from their kennels for the final set of training runs.
Okay, you hold her, okay?
He's aiming to pick the 14 that will make up his Iditarod team, but he has a problem. Too many fast dogs.
I think we have probably 8 that are borderline dogs. I mean, I gotta choose 2 of those 8. So it's very tough.
They're not just any dogs. They belong to 5-time Iditarod champion Dallas Seavey, who finished 2nd to Brent Sass last year and who isn't racing this year. Maxner has never finished the Iditarod in the top 10 before, but he's hoping with Seavey's world-class dog team to have his best finish yet, without the intense pressure that big-name mushers feel.
I'm just gonna kinda run a schedule that we've been running in all our training runs, and it's a good schedule. I mean, it's a top 10 schedule for sure.
Maxner is one of the teams running this year's Iditarod with a shot at challenging reigning champion Brent Sass. Nearly all of last year's top 10 dog teams are back, but a few have different mushers behind the sled, like Eddie Burke Jr., who's running Aaron Burmeister's dogs. Other prominent competitors returning to the race include Bethel's Pete Kaiser, Nick Petit from Big Lake, Danish musher Mila Porsild, and Jesse Royer, the Montana musher and horse wrangler. Sass says he knows he's got a target on his back, but last year's win also gave him confidence.
When you win the Iditarod, it is the top. It's the top of the food chain, you know, and I think the biggest change for me is that I came out of it going, you know what, the last 10 years, I did figure something out. I did learn from all those mistakes I've made over the years.
That confidence helped Sass cruise to a Yukon Quest 550-mile win in February with most of his Iditarod team. In the 1,000-mile Iditarod, he'll have not one but 2 CV dog teams challenging him. Australian musher Christian Turner is running the dogs of 3-time champion Mitch Seavey. Turner had a unique preparation for this year's Iditarod.
I do a lot of team sports in Australia and I surf nearly every day.
Turner last ran the Iditarod in 2015. While he doesn't necessarily consider himself a favorite in this year's lineup, he won't count himself out either since he's running Mitch's team.
I'm no Dallas and I'm no Mitch. I haven't been in that position multiple times, so it's hard for me to tell. But as I said, I'm going to do the best I can. And, you know, if I'm in that position, I'll just keep trying my hardest.
Last year's third place finisher, Jesse Holmes, is also a strong contender. He's going into this year's Iditarod with a different kind of bond with his main competitor. Last year, Holmes invited Sass to help Alaska coastal communities rebuild after Typhoon Murbach devastated the region. As he tore down a storm-damaged home, a wall collapsed, trapping him. Sass was the first to the scene.
When somebody saves your life, you know, and they're the first face that you see, you know, whenever you're getting drug out of a near-death situation, I mean, you know, you look at them differently.
Holmes broke his wrist and a couple of ribs. His hand was too tender to drive a sled until November, and he lost 15 pounds from his already lean body. Still, he says, the experience motivated him to train harder than ever, and he's not going to take it easy on Sass.
I kind of thought about telling Brent, hey man, you know, bring your board shorts, you know, we're going surfing, you're making a wave, and I'm going to catch on to it with you, you know?
But he says there's likely going to be a lot of other strong teams riding that same wave to Nome.
Surfing the wave, living the dream. Jesse Holmes there talking about that accident last year, thanking Brent Sass and how he's been recovering from that. We heard from Jesse in our last episode talking about the impact that has had on him physically. I actually met Jesse many years ago outside of the Iditarod. It was summer and he was doing work trimming a tree. He was actually way up in a tree when we met. I think Jesse's doing dog mushing pretty much full time these days when he's not volunteering on storm recovery or doing ultra marathons and stuff like that. And it's really a jack of all trades kind of thing, being a dog musher. It's not all just running dogs or scooping their poop. They have to do carpentry sometimes. There are mechanical issues with machines that they have. Some of them go fishing in the summertime to get food for themselves and the dogs. They do public speaking at like schools and things like that. It's really a lot that just goes into the dog mushing part. But not all dog mushers support themselves doing dog mushing, whether that's through sponsorships or, for many of them, doing sled dog tourism in the off season. And that brings us to today's listener question.
Hi, Iditapod. This is Jenna calling from Brooklyn, New York. Just want to say I love your show so much, and I really look forward to it each year. I had a question about the affordability of mushing, which I know has come up with the lower race entry this year. I was wondering what kind of other jobs mushers have that they use to be able to afford the dog racing lifestyle. Thanks.
As always, thanks for the kind words, Jenna, and for the question. If the rest of you are keeping track, we've now had listener questions from a Jessica and a Jenna, and now we have an answer from a Joanna. Joanna Jago.
So I work as a pediatric nurse at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, and so, yeah, it can be challenging working full-time and training the dogs, but, yeah, we find a way to make it work.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's impressive. So you work full-time, and how does your shifts work, and how do you handle, running the dogs in between that?
Yeah, so I do 3/12s, which is one of the ways that I can run the dogs is I have 4 days off a week, and so all those days I have off, then we do like training series, and I also have help too. I have a handler who's helped tremendously, and my husband's helped a lot too, so lots of help as well.
It takes a lot of help, as the late great Joe Cocker sang, and then repeated by the Beatles, we get by with a little help from our friends and our dog handlers, I think, in some cases. To follow up, obviously that's Joanna's situation. Her fellow interior Alaska musher Bridget Watkins is an ER nurse. Some folks have office jobs. Others are running or helping run dog sled tours. Some of them even get their whole teams helicoptered up onto glaciers in the summertime so cruise ship passengers can pay to fly up there and ride in or on the sleds. In some cases, an Iditarod musher might be someone working as a handler at a more experienced musher's kennel. And the veteran will give the handler a B team of younger dogs to run the Iditarod and get those dogs more experience, while the veteran themselves maybe takes their more competitive A team in the race. We've seen a few doctors race the Iditarod. There's the Mushin mortician Scott Jansen, a veteran who's not in it this year. Jesse Royer, returning this year, used to be a horse wrangler. And one of the rookies out there racing as I speak is Eddie Burke Jr., who actually quit his job driving a garbage truck in Anchorage to move north to Nenana to mush dogs. Kind of a cool story. I keep wondering if there are any similarities between driving a dog sled and driving a garbage truck. I feel like one might be considered more glamorous than the other. But now, yeah, Burke is now apparently making that dog mushing work his day job. And I think a lot of mushers would tell you, don't quit your day job. Dog mushing can be an expensive hobby or an expensive profession. It's expensive either way. So there's a wide range of different jobs that people do, just like there's a wide range of personalities and this one thing bringing them all together, the love of dogs and dog mushing. So thanks, Jenna, for the question. And just to explain real quickly, if you want to send us a question about dog mushing or the Iditarod, you can record a voice memo of yourself. That's the best way to do it. Most smartphones have a built-in voice memo app. You record yourself asking the question, tell us your name, tell us where you are, and then send that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. Anyway, back to the dogs. It's time for our dog of the day. And we've come full circle now back to Idaho rookie Iditarod musher Jed Stevenson, who talked to Lex at the ceremonial start.
Boomer, he's crazy.
What's his name?
Boomer. So he's named after the Shackleton expedition back in 1910 with the Endurance. He had a list of all of his dogs that were on his ship, and so we decided to name a litter after the Shackleton dogs, so okay. Boomer.
And so that's B-O-O-M-E-R?
Yep.
And can you describe him physically?
Yeah, he's a real muscly dog, high energy. You can hear him barking, and after doing a 300-mile race, he still had the same energy, wanted to do it all over again.
Yeah, he looks like he's a pretty heavy dog.
Yeah, he's bigger than normal huskies, but he doesn't get injured, and he can maintain the pace. And So he's a special dog.
And how much does he weigh? Do you know?
Probably 68 pounds.
And he looks like it black with a little bit of, you know, white.
Blue eyes, big paws.
Yeah.
Just pure muscle.
Yeah. And what kind of personality does he have when he's not running?
He's like a bull in a china store. He's just pure chaos. His name is very fitting for him. He's just a constant explosion.
Ah, yes, that's a big boy, Boomer, a 3-year-old team dog with Jed Stevenson. So Boomer is almost twice as big as our first dog of the day, Dusty, who's a leader and only 35 pounds. You know, it takes all kinds to make a dog team. You can find photos of those dogs of the day, along with all of our Iditarod stories and photos, as well as past episodes of the Iditapod, at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. You can also sign up there for our free Iditarod newsletter. Before we sign off today, here's another look at those standings. And I'm seeing Hunter Keefe, the rookie, a real rookie. This is his first time running the Iditarod Trail. He appears to be the first one into the Rainy Pass checkpoint. That's about 150 miles into the trail. And again, that's after a big ascent up into the pass. They have a pretty interesting run from there down the Dalzell Gorge. So a lot of teams will want to rest up before that. Again, looks like Hunter Keefe was the first into Rainy Pass, followed pretty closely by Ryan Reddington. And just looking at the GPS tracker, it looks like Dan Caduce is on his way into Rainy Pass, moving at the moment. Jesse Holmes is behind Caduce in fourth place at the moment. Looks like his team's taken a break there in between Finger Lake and Rainy Pass somewhere. And then you've got Brent Sass, Richie Deal. We've already talked about them. They're coming in at fifth and sixth at the moment. Kelly Maxner in seventh place, another veteran Iditarod musher. There's Mille Porsild in eighth, and Nick Petit is also moving in ninth. It looks like Aaron Peck rounding out the current top 10. He's currently taking a break as I'm recording this, though. And yeah, like we like to tell people at this point in the race, it's pretty tough to figure out like really who's in the lead. They have different run rest schedules. They know their teams better than anyone else. And they're really just trying to set themselves up for the next run or the run after that to kind of be in the right place at the right time. And the right time can sometimes mean what time of day. And if it's real warm, they're going to try to avoid running during the day, especially seems like lately we've had a lot of sun. So that's going to heat them up. It's going to heat the dogs up. So they've got to keep those dogs from getting too warm and wearing themselves out, especially this early in the race. All right, well, that's about all the time we have for today. Our little team is headed out into the field, onto the trail, and we'll be back tomorrow with another full episode of the Iditapod and more from the 51st running of the Iditarod. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras, thanks to Iditapod reporters Lex Trinan, Liz Ruskin, and Ben Matheson, along with Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon for editorial support. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Thanks for listening, and until next time, happy trails.
And any other stories of him out on the trail or anything that come to mind, ways he's helped you navigate?
He's not a lead dog. He's just a team dog, so he's just helping pull. I can't think of any unique story with him. I'm trying to think if he's killed anything. He's pretty good at killing things.
Like squirrels or something?
Like squirrels and stuff, yeah.